Welcome here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Oreo's Restaurant, every single Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., here with Rob Drummond, Syracuse, CFL, and the NFL. And, of course, I'm Dan Satora here with you for Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, and we're here to talk about a Syracuse team that finally got on the winning side of things. Two games in the beginning, they had won, went on a four-game losing streak, and even though Wake Forest not the best team, they did have the same record. They were 2-4 coming in overall, 0-2 in the ACC, so they were able to get themselves above Wake Forest. And first and foremost, Rob, I mean, what were your initial feelings coming off of that game? Because as Scott Schaefer told me today, we have to remember who Wake Forest is. So what did you take out of it?
You know, at the end of the day, a win is a win. You know, regardless, remember the year we went 11-0. You have to remember also we beat a Colgate team. You know, we dominated a Colgate team. But you know what? The players and the coaches can't delegate or think about who they schedule. You know, because that's up to the AD and that's up to the university. All you can do is go out there and play. They went out there and they won the game, and that's all they're supposed to do.
When these schedules are made, they're obviously made in advance, like you were talking about. So you can't really affect where a team is going to be at. You know, Clemson could have been 2-4 at this point. So, you know, I don't think you can hold that against Syracuse, but can you take a lot of positives away from a game like that, knowing that the way Wake Forest came in was kind of stumbling into it with a bunch of Band-Aids on?
You know, you can take a positive away from any game you possibly play. I mean, in all my career playing football games, every single game I play, I took something from it. You know what? You know, you go out there and use certain things that when you don't execute perfectly, you can go out there and realize that you have to practice a little bit better. So there are certain things you can always take into the game, whether it's a victory or whether it's a loss. The simple fact that it was Wake Forest and they went out there and played as well as they did, that's great going into the future with Clemson coming up. You know what? But they just have to relax and get back to the books and get ready for a tough upcoming team, because they went out there, they played well. But I'll tell you this, it was fun to watch that quarterback. You know, that young quarterback's going to be something special. He reminded me a lot of a young guy named Pearson. And hopefully he'll get the opportunity and the chance to play in the near future, because Terrell, I see a lot of intangibles in this young man that makes him a lot better quarterback than Terrell at this point. You know, but I'm not the head coach. The coach Schaefer's the head coach. I'm just a former player. I'm just an outside observer looking in, and I see what I see. But this young man is definitely going to be a talent.
And Rob, here with Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, for those listening in, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York, right on the water. All season, every season, all year long, only day closed is Monday at Oreo's Restaurant. You're talking about A.J. Long, obviously, the true freshman quarterback. A lot of other coaches around the country, ACC coaches, have been trying to prepare for A.J. and giving him a lot of credit, a lot of respect, even though he's only played in two games, started in one. But when you talk about the intangibles that you see in A.J. Long, what are some of those intangibles that have stuck out to you?
The main thing that sticks out to me is the simple fact that this young man is a true freshman. I can tell from experience myself as playing as a true freshman. I started as a freshman at Syracuse also. This young man is not afraid. He takes the game with the most confidence in the world. You can see that in his approach, his footwork, his signal calls, the way he commands the offense, you know. And that's heard of for someone so young. You know, the way he throws the ball, the way he drops back, every intangible, this young man is not hesitant in all of his movements. And that's something that you do not see in a freshman. And that's something that bodes well for Syracuse.
When you see the way that he has been, and in this first start too, to see a play break down and take off on his feet, that's something that a lot of ACC coaches have talked about, that they see him be so dangerous after the play. More than one coach has said that once the play breaks down, he could be even more dangerous after that. He's been compared to Terrell Hunt. Do you find him right now, from what you saw from Terrell this year and what you saw from A.J. Long, it might be a little bit premature to say it, but do you see him as being more efficient on the offense right now, or is it still too short of a time to do that?
I see him as being way more efficient. You know, let's be honest here. You know, look how Terrell played last year and how he went into this year. You know, it's just as if he took a downturn or something happened. You know, nothing against Terrell. He's a great young man, you know, and a young man I got to know. But A.J. Long came in with a purpose. He came in with a process that he was going to go out there and make Syracuse University a much better football team than him in the offense. And he goes out there and he has all the confidence in the world. And it's, as I said before, this young man is playing with the same attitude I had when I played as a freshman. So, you know, when he makes it, when he does something great, you're going to applaud him. When he does something bad, you're still going to applaud him. Why? Because he's a freshman. A freshman allowed to make mistakes. But he's limiting those mistakes, and that's a good thing.
When you see somebody like him go out and do the positive things that he's done, would you say that as a freshman, if you make mistakes, you know, people are going to give you a chance to come back from something like that? Is he really in the best situation he could be in, knowing the fact that if he does something good, it's not expected, and if he makes mistake, it is expected. So has A.J. Long kind of dropped into the best place a quarterback could be in on this team?
You know what, 30-plus years ago, I was in that same situation. I was an 18-year-old kid out there playing Division I college football at a big-time level. This young man has the attitude. He's going to go out there and play the best he can. He's using his ability to be able to go out there and make plays. That's the exact same thing I did. And everyone's going to applaud him because here's a young man. He's an 18-year-old kid. Remember, last year this time, he was playing high school football. Now he's playing Division I college big-time football in the ACC. So this young man is definitely taking the bull by the horns and basically said to himself, I'm going to go out there and just do the best job I possibly can because he said it on television. I love this sport. What better job could I have right now to be able to playing football at a Division I school and also taking classes and just going out there and having fun. He's having fun and it shows.
That coming from Rob Drummond, Syracuse, Orange, NFL, and CFL alum. And, of course, I'm Dan Satora here with you with Wake Up Call with Dan Satora here from Borio's Restaurant every Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. For those listening in, we'll take a quick step aside. We'll be right back. For everybody that's here tonight, we do have 10% off to Borio's Restaurant. You grab a card right here at the table, and that'll get you 10% off to Borio's and also to Carvel and Cam's Pizzeria. So go ahead and pick up your VIP card courtesy of us. You can only get it when we're here on site on Wednesdays from 6 to 8. Grab your card and enjoy a little bit of percent off on dinner on us tonight. Rob Drummond, Dan Storr, we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Borio's Restaurant, here with Rob Drummond, as always, every Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., talking Syracuse football and around the NFL as well, and some other big things that are going on in sports in general. One of the things we'll address tonight is signatures. How much can you police them when you sign something and somebody goes off and sells it? Does that have anything to do with the university or the students? And then also students actually getting paid to do some of this stuff and everything with Florida State, because Florida State continues to play football despite everything that's been going on. So we'll address all of that here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Borio's Restaurant. Once again, your 10% off card to Borio's Restaurant is right here at our table. Just come up and pick it up during the show. And Rob from Syracuse, CFL, and the NFL, as we continue the conversation, before we get into some of these broader topics that are handled, you know, going on with everybody that schools have to address now, like different things that have been going on as far as what to sign, when to sign, how to sign, what events you should do. We will be talking about that. But to keep with Syracuse a little bit longer, A.J. Long, when I talked to the coach going into this game, Dabo Swinney of Clemson, he said what he likes about him is that he can throw the ball downfield. He likes his arm strength. He likes his ability to move on his feet. He said a lot of positive things, and Dabo's been working with a true freshman, Deshaun Watson, before he got injured, putting him into games and being in that similar situation, so he knows all about a true freshman. What can you say when Clemson's head coach is giving respect to A.J. Long, knowing that A.J.'s only been in a couple games, that he really has seen a lot of great things that he likes about him?
That's very very humbling for a young freshman. AJ Long at Syracuse. The simple fact that these ACC coaches, these coaches that have been there for years and see talent come and go, are giving you the respect and the praise that you don't garner it, but you go out there and you play for the simple fact of just impressing not yourself but others around you with your play. So that's a great compliment from AJ Long, who's a young freshman with a bright future at Syracuse. You know, so it's something that he can hang his hat on, and it's something I feel that he's proud of, and something he's going to go out there and just work hard for to get better every day.
One of the other things that Dabo Swinney said to me when I spoke to him on the ACC teleconference going into Syracuse Clemson, he said to me that, quote, coolness to him and a poise that you don't really see in a lot of freshmen. He said that about AJ Long. What can you say to that statement from Dabo Swinney, this coolness and this poise that you really don't expect from freshmen that he's seeing in AJ Long?
I mean, when you watch him play, you know, it seems as if he's just a crappy veteran. You know, the kid does not get rattled. And that's a good thing for a freshman. I remember being in games for the simple fact when we played Penn State my freshman year for the first time, being in the Carrier Dome and just walking in there, and it's like I was in awe, because as a kid growing up, I'd always meant to watch Syracuse play Penn State football games, and you know, I never thought in my wildest dreams I'd ever be playing on that stage. But when the game came along, you know, that's one thing about me that the coaches said that they really liked me. The simple fact that I didn't get rattled. You know, I took the bull by the horns by the simple fact that I always told myself as a freshman playing football at Syracuse, I belong there. You know, so I didn't go out there. I wasn't nervous. I wasn't afraid. I understood that I was a freshman, so anything I did was positive. You know, no one's going to see me in a bad light because I could always learn. And that's the same thing I see this young AJ Long taking. The simple fact that he's going out there and realizing this. You know what? And no one's expecting anything from this young man. We're in a situation right now where no one's even expecting him to go to a bowl game. So if he can go out there and grab the victory, win these next, maybe not against Clemson, but you know, get the 6 wins and get to a bowl game. Wow, what a great promising future for this young man.
And AJ Long was one of the guys that I think it's important to address. When he was getting recruited by Syracuse, when he got the offer from Syracuse, Syracuse said, we want you to come in and play quarterback. There were other schools that were trying to get AJ Long to switch, said he was too short, he had no business playing quarterback, he didn't have the body type for that. So when you look at that type of success story, you played with Daryl Johnston and with Moose only had one offer, and that was Syracuse. Nobody wanted to give him a chance. He went on to play for the Cowboys, had a long career in the NFL, won multiple Super Bowl rings. So kind of looking at that similarity, even though Moose played fullback, to have a guy like AJ Long who's not supposed to make it, not supposed to be successful in this position, what can you say about what he's been doing right now, knowing that there were other D1 teams saying, you can play for us, just don't play quarterback?
You know, kids like that usually come in with a chip on their shoulder. You know, they won't say it to anyone, but they have something to prove. I remember being in Syracuse back in the mid to late 80s when I was on a team with a bunch of guys who had gotten single scholarship offers from one team. I mean, All-American free safety Marcus Paul had one scholarship offer from Syracuse. You know, Chris Ingram had one scholarship offer from Syracuse. So a lot of guys I played with only had one scholarship offer, and it was Syracuse. But you know, it's a testament to how those young men went out there, and we basically fought tooth and nail to go out there to make ourselves into a champion and a perennial power like we were back in Syracuse. This young man is basically going out there with all odds against him and defying those odds. So I give him a lot of credit for being so composed, so simplistic, and the simple fact that he realizes how good he is, and he takes that, takes that attitude and goes up there and makes himself almost a better player, which makes the team a better player also.
With all the Syracuse fans that care about this team, is A.J. Long the best thing that could have happened to it?
A.J. seems the greatest thing right now that could have happened to Syracuse, for the simple fact that he's a young, up-and-coming freshman. Remember, he's a true freshman. He's 18 years old. For the simple fact that he's going out there and he's doing something people would love to do, but he's having fun doing it. Just listen to him. Just watch him play. He's having fun, and that's a key to being successful in football.
One thing that Scott Schaefer said to me was when A.J. was going into the game where he was going to get an opportunity, when him and Austin Wilson were going into that last game at home where they were going to get a chance to play some ball, he said to me that what he loves about AJ is AJ's, you know, his energy that he has about him. And he said that he'll go up to him in practice and he'll run right up to him and say, Coach, I'm ready to embarrass your defense today. Like, I'm ready to do it. I'm ready to go out there and make that defense look bad. And here he is. He had never played it down in a game at that point. But he said that's how AJ has been. That's the type of kid that he is. When you have a guy that has that tenacity, you and I talk about having catalysts, having guys that you can can lean on in the program. Is he the guy right now that you can lean on, knowing that he's running into practice, going up to the head coach and saying, I'm going to beat your defense today, even though I've never played a down at that point for college football?
You know what? Don McPherson was the same way when he got his opportunities. Go out there and have fun. You know, and just football's a game. It's like, you can't take it serious. It's not a job. It's about having fun. If you love, truly, truly love the game, you see that in guys, because, you know, when something bad happens, they understand. They're not perfect. They're going to make mistakes. Just go out there and work that much harder the next time. So it's a game of pride. Pride within oneself. This young man is going out there, he's having a lot of fun. He has a lot of pride in himself, and it shows.
You and I had come here to Borio's before with Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, here with Rob Drummond and myself. Dan Satora here at 8891 McDonald's Parkway, Cicero, New York, for those listening in. You and I had talked about before that this team lacked passion, that they were looking around and instead of saying, you know what, I'm going to do it, I'm going to be the guy, that they were looking around and saying, you know what, I'm the quarterback, but maybe my running back can do it. Or, you know, if I can't get this down, there's three running backs behind me, he can do it. Or maybe that defensive end can do it because I'm tired or for whatever reason. We talked about a big lack of passion. Is A.J. Long that passion that the team has been looking for? Have you found a guy that you feel like you can say is really passionate about this team at this point?
You know, does that young man look like he's waiting around for anybody to go out there and make plays? Or is he out there trying to make plays himself to try and win games? He's out there trying to make plays himself to win games. He's running, he's flying around, he's getting down there for his receivers, he's getting everybody excited on the sideline, he's getting everybody excited when he walks into the huddle. This young man wants to win. This young man wants to perform, and he wants to do well. Right now, he has no idea how long he's going to be in there, you know, with the exception of Austin Wilson coming back or even Terrell Hunt coming back. So right now, he's going to take the moment and fly with it. So right now, this young man is the best thing that could have happened to Syracuse as far as a jump start for them to get this offense going. Yes, they have a tough task coming out this weekend, but they had a tough task against Florida State also, and that was his first game playing. And look how well he played. Now that he has a few games under his belt, he's not a freshman anymore. So this young man, do not be surprised by how well he plays.
When would it be safe for you to say, leave the ball in A.J. Long's hand, don't give it back to Terrell Hunt, don't give it to Austin Wilson, don't give it to Mitch Kimball. If Allen Edward ever makes it back up here, don't give it to him either, the true freshman as well. When is the time to say, we're going to leave Long at quarterback, we're going to let this train take its course?
You know what, you have to base that really off performance. If you look at Terrell Hunt, how he played the first few games at the beginning of this year, he didn't play well at all. You know, as opposed to how he played last year, he played unbelievable last year. He did a great job at quarterback. But this year, it was a slip-off. His timing was off. I don't know whether he let, you know, the reading the press clippings go to his head and things of that nature, but he just didn't command his team. And the young freshman comes in and commands his team right now, so spring ball is going to be very, very interesting. That's when positions are won and lost, because right now, A.J. Long is playing the best football out of any quarterback that's about to field this year for Syracuse. And he deserves the chance to be able to start next year, and that'll happen in spring ball. No, I don't think Terrell Hunt should lose his starting job from an injury, but right now, the way this young man is playing, you know what? It says like, sorry, Terrell, but this young man is playing too well to disrupt his team.
When you look at the history of Terrell Hunt, he's got in trouble before. He's gotten suspended before. And he's done some things off the field that have not shown his leadership. He's not been a starter, then been a starter. He had a good season last season. This season, he's the outright guy. There's no Drew Allen. There's nobody stepping in front of him, and he struggles. A.J. Long comes in, hasn't gotten in trouble off the field, hasn't done anything, has gone to work every day, and has gotten more successful over the two games that he's played. I know that you said, you know, obviously injury-wise you can't take it away from Terrell, but when you look at Terrell's timeline, does he have a shorter window than other starters that have been injured because he's had character flaws off the field and issues on the field?
I mean, honestly, it's football. If you can play, you can play. I don't care how bad you are. Just stick around the league. You know, from Ray Rice to Adrian Peterson, Pac-Man Jones, or whoever it is. If you can play, they're going to play. Look at Jameson Winston. All the trouble he's getting into, but they're still playing because he's the most talented quarterback on that team. So if you can play, you can play. Right now, Austin Wilson is playing at a higher level than Terrell Hunt, bottom line. Even when Terrell Hunt comes back, if Austin Wilson,
you mean AJ?
AJ Long is playing at a higher level than Terrell. No, so when he comes back, it's not going to make a difference. You know, this young man is playing. This young man is performing. Perform on the field, and you will stay in that starting position. Terrell didn't perform on the field. On the field, the first half of the season, and AJ is.
when you look at AJ's family, I think a big thing with AJ's family is Ace. His father is always around. He's always posting things about his son. He's always telling his son to reach higher, to have faith, to believe in God, to care about the things that are bigger than football, to take each step. He's not the type of dad, and you know this, I mean, you've coached before, to be around parents that think no, their children can do no wrong, everybody's an MVP. He's behind his son, but he's respectfully behind his son and asking his son to continue to improve without being one of those fathers that's trying to live vicariously through him and being a little bit ridiculous. What can you say about Ace Long and his run and everything? Because I've come, you know, into contact with him a lot when I put something out about AJ or, you know, have a message out or do a story or an interview with him. He's always there. So what can you say about what his dad has kind of been to the family? Because it's not just AJ. If you pay attention to Ace on social media, he's there for the rest of his children as well.
You know, it's a great structure to the family. You know, that's a great lesson you can teach your children. You know, my running back coach, my junior and senior year at Syracuse with Michael Owens. I was playing with Michael Owens, the other talented running back in the backfield with us. And I was a starter at the time, but Michael was a very, very talented running back. I can tell you here, and watching him in practice and watching him in games, well, a lot of times I would be like, wow. The simple fact, Coach Offer just sat me down one day, you know, and he said to me, he said, you know, Robert, you know why you're the starter and you continue to be the starter? And I asked him why. He said, you know what, because you perform in practice and you perform in games. In games, you know, you outperform them. I said, you know what, you go that extra mile. So that's the one thing I took from that. You know what, it's performance is what's going to get you on the field as a starter. You know, and once AJ and Terrell and all, everybody and every player on the team realizes that, they'll be in a starting position. But right now, they have to base it off performance. You know, AJ right now is outperforming everyone at the quarterback position. So I give that man kudos to that young man for being able to go out there and accomplish what he's accomplished in such a short time, because he's doing a great job.
I want to go back to my conversation with Dabo Swinney, the head coach of the Clemson Tigers, going into this game against Syracuse. He talked about A.J. Long saying he's, quote, he's kind of got a little bit of a gunslinger mentality, end quote, and he also talked about his accuracy and how he throws a dart. When you think about gunslinger, how do you define that? Maybe not just with looking at A.J., but overall, what do you have to do in your mind to be a gunslinger? Because to me, that's a high accolade. It's not just, hey, you're a good quarterback, you can complete some passes. When you're a gunslinger, you hear Peyton Manning, you hear Tom Brady, you hear Brett Favre. So when you hear Dabo Swinney say that about A.J. Long, how do you kind of define it?
Gunslinger to me is somebody who takes chances, but you know, when taking those chances, they're usually successful. It's like you said, a Peyton Manning, you know, a Brett Favre, a Tom Brady, quarterbacks that go out there and command the game. You know, you can't be a passive quarterback. That's not a position you want to be on the field, because not only do you have to drop back and look downfield to make reason for a dart to a receiver, you also have to worry about these defensive ends who are 6'4", 6'5", 260, 270 pounds running down your throat just to destroy you. So a quarterback is a position. It's the most difficult position on the field. And to have a good standard mentality is a good mentality to have, because it allows you to be able to go out there and be creative. And all those quarterbacks that just named are creative, and all those quarterbacks that just named are very successful.
Before we end the conversation between what Dabo Swinney, the Clemson Tigers head coach, thought about A.J. Long, the last thing that he said to me was, quote, the more I watched, the more I liked, end quote, looking at the film of A.J. Long. There's not a ton of film out there, but there's two games-ish of film for A.J. Long. I mean, obviously he had Wake Forest and he had a bunch of drives against Florida State. Are you going along the same lines right now? The more you see of him, the more you like? Is that kind of where you're at as well?
There's enough film out there on this young man to understand that this man has a lot of ability. He's capable, and he's not easily, you know, bullied, or he's not easily swayed to being fearful. This young man, as I said, has a gunslinger mentality, and he really wants to go out there and perform and win. He understands he's a freshman. He understands that he's allowed to make mistakes. But you know what? He's not going to make the mistakes. So that's a dangerous combination when you get a team behind you with a quarterback who's capable of being able to go out there and win games for you.
Going over to the defensive side here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Morio's Restaurant. For those listening in, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. We're here every single Wednesday from 6 to 8. And while we're here, you can grab your 10% off VIP exclusive card, which will get you 10% off football season and basketball season at Borio's Restaurant. Any meal that you get, lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch, the only thing it's not valued for is any of the banquet rooms or anything like that. But anytime you eat here, you get 10% off, and you can grab one of those cards while we're here today and every Wednesday that Rob Drummond and I are here. to go to the defensive side of the ball for Syracuse. I also talked to Dabo Swinney about that from Clemson to bring up a few topics here. And he said, quote, "I think they're better than they were last year," end quote, stating to me, even though they kind of look the same, he thinks that there's an improvement. You looking at the defense through the last seven games that they played, what can you say about Syracuse? Do you agree with Dabo Swinney, the Clemson head coach, that Syracuse's defense has improved to you? Because last year they had a lot of good defensive moments. They stopped Andre Williams of BC from having a good game, knocked him out of the game. So what can you say in connection to this? Are they better?
I think they've definitely improved, but for the simple fact that Syracuse hasn't been able to score points, so it's the defense on the field a lot longer. When you're on the field a lot longer, mistakes seem to happen on defense, but it hasn't been happening to him. You know, for the simple fact that they scored two touchdowns on defense is faster. You know, it's just that they're fun to watch, you know. The offense is going to realize that defense has their back. And by that, I mean, so, you know, at some point, the offense is going to have to start realizing that when they get into the red zone, they're going to have to start putting the ball in the end zone, because this defense is playing their hearts out right now. They're doing a great job. They're flying around. They're making plays. They're getting the ball back to the offense. Offense is a problem right now, but they need to score. Yes, they were fortunate enough to score last game, but that was defense. Defense scored two touchdowns, you know. For the simple fact, you know what, you need three parts of a football game to win that game. That's offense, defense, and special team. They all need to come together. Defense is playing great right now, but offense and special teams, which usually come later, the following suit.
When you talk about special teams, Cole Murphy, true freshman kicker for Syracuse. A lot of freshmen, true freshmen for Syracuse that are really carrying this team right now. Cole Murphy's one of those guys that's not talked about, I think, enough. He made all the field goals he took from 20, 30, 40-plus yards that he had in the game against Wake Forest outdoors. What can you say about Cole Murphy's effort and how special teams has been in that case? Because Ryan Norton was so night and day Jekyll and Hyde. Obviously, you know, before Ryan Norton, there was a kicker in Ross Kropman. Unfortunately, due to injury, couldn't play anymore and had played injured for 2 years, which a lot of people didn't know. And to go from Ross to Ryan was obviously a step down. To go to Cole Murphy now, it seems like if you put him in a situation where he needs to do it, he's not missing much at all, and he's not missing outside. So what can you say about Cole Murphy and special teams to give a little bit of credit to Syracuse there, where a lot of people don't talk about special teams?
People need to realize, as I said before, special teams is one-third of the game. There's offense, there's defense, then there's special teams. Special teams can win or, you know, win or lose a game for you. Just look at any field goal kicker with no time left on the clock when he comes onto the field to win the game for you. So Syracuse is doing a great job in that department. As I said before, right now, if I had to pick out of the three which one's lagging behind, I'd say offense is lagging behind. Because defense on top and special teams, you know, offense is third. But right now, they're starting to come together. And this is the time right now. They need three more wins to become bowl eligible. They have to take it one game at a time. They have to worry about clinching right now. And the special teams can go out there and win a game for them, great. If not, defense and offense have to pick up that slack. So right now, it's a team effort. That's why it's called team. It's not an individual sport. It's not golf. It's not tennis. It's football. It's a team effort, a team sport, and we have to go out there and win as a team.
There was a question asked to Scott Schaefer in the teleconference for the ACC this week, and that was obviously the struggle in the red zone. I believe they're under 40% efficient in the red zone. So the question was, can you get to a bowl game if you're not good in the red zone? Well, I think that they've shown they're only one game under 500. They're 3-4 right now, 1-2 in the ACC, that it doesn't matter what you do in the red zone, because you could have a 70-yard run. You could have a 40-yard pass from A.J. Long. You could have Stephen Ishmael do something, you know, crazy again when he catches the ball coming across the middle and he just powers his way in. So are you concerned with the red zone? Because it keeps coming up every week. Other people in the media besides myself haven't asked this question, but the red zone has come up a lot. What can you say about the red zone? Are you concerned, or are you more like Scott Schaefer, who just brushes it off and says, you know what, whether we struggle there or not, we just have to figure out a way to win?
You know, it's a mental thing for these young guys, these young players and everything. They just have to go out there and perform and play well. You know, if you start thinking about the red zone, it needs to be one more thing to think about in a football game. So just go out there and play the game of football. I'm not concerned with it, just like Scott said. You know, eventually it's going to come to him. You know, they struggled when Terrell Hunt was their quarterback, and when they got now AJ's in there now, it's going to give that young man a chance to go out there and gel and get used to these players. Now, right now, this is only his second game. It's only the second game he's played. So once this young man gets comfortable, once he gets familiarity, once he's able to go out there and understand his player, understand his offensive line, understand the tempo of the game, understand the intangibles that it takes in football, he'll be fine. So there's still a lot of football left to play. A lot of football.
When you look at the red zone, it's good for a team to get in the red zone, obviously. You know, you get inside the 20 of the team that you're playing against, the chances of you scoring should go up. Obviously, it's a better position to be in, but you've been out there, you've been in the backfield, you've been a wide receiver, you've been a running back. When you have been on the field in a situation inside the red zone, what is your take on it? Is it more difficult because it's a shorter, it's a shorter field, but you're closer to the end zone, but as you see with teams like Syracuse, they're better when they have more space to work with. Other teams are automatic when they have less space to work with. So from your experience on the field, is it more difficult or is it easier to be in the red zone when you're in that tight space?
It's a lot more difficult for the simple fact that teams really knuckle down at that point because now they know they can give up a touchdown. When it's open field, you can get saved. Another one of your players can run a guy down and make a tackle. You can always protect yourself. You're 20 yards in, as a defensive player, you can't protect yourself. And when you're 20 yards in, as an offensive player, you know. The first thing is you need to get points out of that because if you don't get points, you can lose that game. So it's a mental game at that point once you get inside the red zone because the defense wants to stop you and hold you to a field goal, and the offense definitely wants to come up with 7 points. So it's a frustrating mental game for players.
When you're 5-yard line and inside, let's go even deeper into the red zone. We've seen teams do it before. First down, run up the middle. Second down, run up the middle. Third down, run up the middle. We're on the 1-yard line. Fourth down, let's not kick a field goal. Let's run up the middle again. More often than not, when you continue to run the ball and try to just punch it in, if they stop you twice, they're most likely going to stop you there when it comes to that type of defense, just stop defense on the goal line. What can you say about that? I know you are a power back. I know that you like to knock guys over when you were playing, but when you're right close to the goal line, what would you rather do? Because we've seen Adonis Amin Moore, who is a wrecking ball, unable to get in. We've seen Prince Tyson Gully unable to get in. So what is it about it? Is it just you need a guy that's more powerful? Is it the fact that you don't like running up the middle in those situations? When you had the ball and you were behind the quarterback, did you want to pitch? Did you want to go to the outside? Or did you want to go straight down the middle? Because it seems like once a team gets your number, it makes it very difficult, even for a guy like Adonis, who's been able to be so strong there.
No, one of the toughest positions to play in football is short yardage and goal line. It's a package. You have some short yardage and goal line personnel. And as a head coach, has to look and see how well his offensive line is playing. Because at that point, it's about attitude. It's mano a mano. I line up against you, I try and push you as hard as you don't try and push me. And a running back has that same attitude. You know what? As soon as I get this ball, I'm going to run as hard as I can. If I break you, I break you. If you break me, you break me, so be it. But that's the approach you have to take. To get 1 yard is the hardest thing you ever want to do in collegiate or professional football, and people don't understand that. It's one of the toughest things you have to do because you have a ton of weight within a short area, and you have to, as a running back, try and run through that weight. If that weight hits you and pushes on you, it's like you're not going to get it. But it's an attitude situation. That's why it's practiced so much. It's called short yardage and goal line, and you practice it daily. Syracuse right now is struggling with those simple facts, but you know what? A running back goes no further than his offensive line takes him. So you can't put the onus on Adonis, the simple fact that he's getting yards, and so you also have to put that onus on the offensive lines also. He'll praise them as well, but he'll also beat them over the bad because he'll go as far as they take him.
Rob Drummond on the goal line for Syracuse.
I score all the time. Just give it. Give Moose Johnson. Put Moose back in front of me. We score all the time. You know, we were both 230-pound running backs. You know what? So they just put all that weight behind one another, just running in. And we had a great offensive line. And we did well in that situation. That's one thing Coach Mack always prides himself in doing, believing. When we had a short yardage situation, we knew we were going to get it because, as I said before, it's about attitude. We had attitude back then when we played.
There we go. We've solved it. Here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora with Rob Drummond of Syracuse, CFL, and the NFL. And, of course, I'm Dan Satora here with you every Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. at Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway, in Cicero, New York. You just solved it. For Syracuse to be better on the goal line, we need to check your eligibility. Rob Drummond, number 36. And nobody's wearing your number right now. Put you back out there. We'll be back here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora. Rob, I'd put you back out there in a heartbeat. I'd stand in front of you for you if you need me to. So I know Moose is a little bit busy, but I think we've known each other long enough. I'll take a lick for you. Why not? We'll be back here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, Borio's Restaurant. I don't know how much I can help you, but I'll try. I'll be back in a few minutes.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary, or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Back here, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway, for those listening in Cicero, New York, here every single Wednesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. We have exclusive VIP cards that will get you 10% off at Borio's during football season and basketball season for the Syracuse Orange, and you can pick those up when we're here on Wednesdays, every Wednesday, with Rob Drummond, Syracuse, CFL, and the NFL. And, of course, I'm here with you every week as well, Dan Satora. And you and I were talking off the air a little bit about injuries. You played for a very long time. You played in the NFL, CFL. You've won championships. You were here at Syracuse as a true freshman playing all the way through. You know what it's like to get banged up. But like you were talking about, there's pain and there's injury and there's a big difference. You're dealing with pain every single game. So how could you know the difference between that pain and that injury, or when something was about to go wrong? Did you know your body well enough to say, you know what, coach, this feels different this time? Because sometimes it comes down to a player being able to say something about it.
Well, most athletes know if they're capable of playing. After the game on Saturday, you come in and watch the film and everything on Sunday, and then Monday when you're here at practice, you'll realize that your body's capable of going now. You know, and they give you treatment, they give you ice and stem and all those things of that nature. But if you can't go, you go out to practice, and you can't perform in practice like you're capable of performing, you know your own body, you know you're hurt. You know, and at that point, you know, if you're capable of performing, because Coach Harper used to always tell me my junior and senior year that even at, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90% as an athlete, I was still better than half the players out there I was playing against. So sometimes you just suck it up, you know, you realize you love the game and that it's only for a fleeting moment that you'll be able to play this game. You're not going to be able to make a career out of it. I was fortunate enough to do that, but a lot of players aren't. So when you get that opportunity to be able to go out there and play, you'll play. Even if it's an elbow injury or a hand injury or, you know, upper body injury, as they call it now. As a running back, you don't worry about that because you run with your legs. So you don't think about that. I've played games with broken hands before. I've played games with a dislocated elbow before. They just taped it up. So you don't think about that. You just go out there and play the game. As a running back, you can avoid getting those hit because if they give you the ball, if your left side is hurt, you just throw it on your right side. You know, and there's certain ways like guys know how to understand the game. They can be trapped enough to be able to go out there and perform. You don't worry about pain or injury as a young kid playing the game of football. You just go out there and play the game because you love to play.
You could say something like that, but obviously not every running back, not every player is the same, even guys in the NFL, depending on how long they're going to stay out. Maurice Jones-Drew has had injuries before that weren't season-ending, but didn't play for the rest of the season after that. You're very nonchalant in saying, you know what, you can break your hand, you keep playing. You know, you dislocated your elbow, you said that, you know, they tape it up, you just put the ball on the other side. You can do something like that. Not everybody does it. What prevents the pain for you? When you have a broken hand and they put you back in the game, when you have dislocated dislocated your elbow and you say, you know what, coach, just tape it up and get me back in there. Is it the adrenaline that's changing it for you, passion, love for the game? Because I would imagine at some point after Saturday, you're going to feel that pain somewhere, somehow. So what makes that pain go away for you? What kind of changed it for you that you could play with something that, I mean, anybody in this room dislocates their elbow, you're going to feel it, but you can play through it. So how did you handle something like that?
Didn't even think about it. I just love the game of football so much, and I wanted to be out there with my teammates and help them win the game. The next day the pain's going to hurt a lot. I remember I dislocated my shoulder. I wasn't able to continue the game at that point because it popped out and it popped back in, and that's a different kind of pain. It was frustrating, but there's a simple fact that I knew I would heal one day, and I knew that pain would go away. But if I was able to put it back in and tape it up where I could play, I would have. But the doctors told me I couldn't. So there's certain times if your body fails you, then you know you can't play the game. If your body's not failing you, it's just a little sore or it hurts a lot, you can deal with that.
You told me before that you've had 9 concussions.
The 50s, yes.
That you know of. You've had 9.
Okay. Yes.
Concussion tests obviously are very important now. There's a lot of different things that teams have to do. If a player tells you that they're okay, it doesn't matter. You still have to run them through all the tests. Coaches don't like talking about it because they get scrutinized a lot. There's a lot of things that have happened. Colt McCoy with the Cleveland Browns and how they handled him and put him back in the game changed the whole way the NFL looked at it. What were concussion tests like when you were a player? Because now it's an issue. Now people are worried about brain damage. But back then, the NFL was still denying that there was any connection to brain damage. So when you had concussions, how did they handle you?
They would bring you to the sideline. They would hold their finger in front of you. They'd be like, look up, look down, look left, look right. They'd tell you to count forward, come 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now count backwards, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, you're good. Here's your helmet. Go back in. That was it. That was the extent of it. They would have you walk forward, they would have you walk backwards. And they would look at your balance, they would look at your gait, they would look at your eyes and see if you're okay, and they would send you back into the game. It was an unwritten rule back then that football players are tough and they rise above the concussions because we had no idea what these concussions consisted of and all the things later on in life that these players would get from it. So back then it was so lax on concussion. I remember the West Virginia game, the one that we went for the 2-point conversion and beat West Virginia in 1987. I had gotten a concussion earlier in that game. I was knocked out. They allowed me to be able to go back into the game, and I got a second concussion. That's the worst thing as an athlete you can ever do because it's usually the second concussion that kills you. So I was very, very lucky at that point. But once again, I loved the game. I wanted to play the game. I thought I had cleared the Cowboys out of my head. The doctors cleared me to go, and I went back into the game. Ended up getting another one. But you know what? By the grace of God, they found out how bad they are, and now they're taking more precaution. They're being very careful with these players. And I applaud that. For the simple fact that I have a 6-year-old son who's very athletic, very, very talented. But I refuse to let him play football until he's like 6 or 7, in 6th and 7th grade, because there's no need for my young son to be playing football at that young age. But that's just the father being prepared. Very, very, very cautious, and we just understand that the game of football and understand that there's no need for it. He's going to be talented when he's 5, 6, 7. He's going to be talented when he's 8, 9, 10, 11. So that's the way I approach it.
You talked about being in a game where you had your second concussion and the fact that that is the concussion that everybody worries about. That is the if you get them too close together, especially in the same game, that they can kill you. When you found out that you had the first concussion and the second concussion coming off of something like that, how do you respond? Because there's bigger things than football. There's obviously life is happening every single day, and nobody knows what's going on in the lives of any of the players. A lot of these players, even at Syracuse, some of them have children now. Some of them have come from nothing. Some have lost their fathers. Some have no idea who their mother is. A lot of people have been through a lot of different things. And when you go through something like you did with double concussion in one game, how did you look at life after that, knowing that you were a select few and a small percentage that was alive after something like that?
I was a 20, 21-year-old kid, basically living a life of being a Division I college football player, having fun, and at the time, we were 11-0. I didn't care. I didn't know anything about it. The doctors didn't know anything about it. They did not know about concussions back then as what they know about concussions now. So for me, it was just a head injury that, I could still go to school, I could still function, I didn't have headaches, I wasn't vomiting, I had none of the symptoms what they said were perceived to be bad. So I thought it was, I was okay. You know, but now we're starting to find out things about concussions. Even getting stingers, when you get being hit someone, you get pain down your shoulder, and there's numbness. That's considered a mild, a third-degree concussion. I never knew that back then. But, you know, these are certain things that you always wanted to be a part of something. You always wanted to be on a football field. And at that point in my career, guys weren't dying from this. Guys are dying from it now. So everybody's starting to take a little bit more notice of it now.
Have you looked to address anything yourself, knowing that you've had at least 9 concussions? Have you thought about, you know, going and getting tested, having them look at your brain, have them see if there's anything abnormal or anything that's going on? Because some of these athletes, after they passed away, Junior Seau, showed signs of something that's reoccurring with NFL players right now in his brain that might have triggered him to do what he did, might have triggered him to act the way he did. The Kansas City player that took his own life, things may have been triggered with him in his brain. Have you thought, or have you gone to the doctor and said, hey, you know, check me out, make sure everything is okay? I mean, how do you kind of handle it, seeing that other NFL players and other professionals like yourself have been in a position where sometimes they couldn't really control what was going on?
It's always interesting to me. I've had 11 personal friends who've all have committed suicide at one point because of that CTE, that chronic encephalitis, but the brain injury that you get from constant having concussions and constantly getting hit in the head. And for me personally, it's just like, you know, there are symptoms that happen, whether it be depression, you know, whether it be headaches, getting Alzheimer's, getting dementia, things of that nature that haven't happened to me now. Not to say that it won't happen, but the simple fact that, you know, I actually plan on getting tested next year, but I always consider myself sharp as a tack. You know, I come up with ideas. I'm always using my brain in situations where I think, whether it be with work, whether it be creating raps, the programs I created, whether it be creating Cubs, the other program I created, you know, coming up with a patent that I have 3 years ago, an algorithm that I created myself. So I'm always using my brain. So I will be the first to know if I start going crazy. I'm going to get out there and get help.
I'll definitely be the first to know talking when you're here. If you start talking about hot dogs, and we're talking about Syracuse, but when you talk about having 11 close friends that had committed suicide that had CTE, when you hear the NFL previously say there is no connection between concussions and brain damage, you're an outspoken guy. You're somebody who has gone and spoken to the community, spoken to children. You try to do the right thing. When the NFL was denying it, how are you handling it, knowing that you've been hit hard by CTE and what it's done to your friends?
You know what? I always sit here and say, you know, everything happens for a reason. I'm going to sit out there and ball and throw my fist up and stomp my feet, you know, because everything happens for a reason. And now, when the NFL did that case, and $700 million was awarded to the NFL players for the whole concussion issue, and then a federal judge threw it up because I said it wasn't enough, you know. And then that's when I started talking, because I said to myself, it's like, you know, this is, it's way much more than that, because guys are dying. You see one owner dying. Not one owner has died from head injuries. And they knew so much more about it than they let on to these players. You know, and it's sad to sit there and watch a bunch of guys, you know, basically give their life, you know, give their heart and soul to play a game, and then be treated so badly after they're done, to retire for the game. Some of these guys don't have medical terms. Some of these guys have dementia. Some of these guys are in such worse shape now that you couldn't imagine. You know, but it's good to see, even being named in the NFL, the NFL concussion lawsuit, which I actually am named in, but for the simple fact that I found out what it's about. And it's about basically, like, younger guys like myself will only be rewarded money if down the road I either come up with dementia or CTE or Alzheimer's or some kind of brain injury. Whereas the guys who are getting the money or getting the help now are guys who are better affected now. So all the guys who are being affected now are the guys who will get the money. A lot of players, we're fine with that. Just take care of the guys right now who put their heart and soul into the game, and take care of the guys right now who are hurting right now. Because right now, I'm not hurting. I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me. Not to say that, you know, somewhere down the line, that I'm 50, 60, 70, 80 years old, it doesn't hit me then. But you can take care of me then. But for right now, take care of the guys that need it now.
Knowing everybody that you know that was affected by CTE, how did you handle that? Because we talk about life being bigger than football. Scott Schaefer talks about all the time, I want to turn these guys into good men, good gentlemen, good people in the community, more than I want to make them good football players. That'll come, but He wants you to be able to leave football, which you will all do at some point, which you did after a very long career where you were very successful, but you're going to have to leave football eventually, and so he wants to create positives. So we know that the life that's happening outside of football is always bigger. How did you handle having, I mean, when you say 11, if I had one, I mean, I do have a friend that did commit suicide. It wasn't due to that. It was due to what I think to be depression, and it was one of my mentors and closest friends in college. But suicide is a different breed. CTE is a different breed. How do you handle something like that? How have you been able to get through that? Because you've seen a lot in your life. There's been a lot that's gone on. How do you adjust when something like that happens, knowing that it was suicide, but CTE kind of makes it the suicide that is your fault but not your fault?
I mean, honestly, you have two choices. You can let it break you, or you can let it build you. I choose to let it build me. You know, there's nothing in this man that I ever let get me so down that I can ever go into a hole where I'm so depressed that I feel sad for myself or feel bad for everyone else. You know, everything, as I said before, everything happens for a reason. You just have to understand that, stand up, you know, tomorrow brings a brighter day, just go out there and just be the best person, do the best thing I possibly can. I have two young children. You know, every day I sit here and try to do the best I possibly can to make sure they're successful in life. You know, and that's what drives me. You know, yes, it was tough to lose Andre. Andre Waters was one of the first guys who killed himself. You know, this was Andre about 10, 11, 12 years ago. Ended up shooting himself, and they tested his brain. He had CTE. You know, Shane Drunette, you know, a good friend of mine also, and the list of Todd Bell, and the list goes on. But you know what? God wanted him more. You know, and I'm not religious. You know, I'm spiritual. But the simple fact that everything happens for a reason. But that reason is the chronic brain injuries they got playing the game of football. And these are the players that the NFL needs to be taken care of before they take their own life. You know? And so what's a multi-billion-dollar industry not doing? Taking care of the players that basically garnered them that money, or allowed them to be able to make that money, allowed, you know, Mr. Jerry Jones to be able to go out there and build a $1 billion stadium. He didn't build it. He built the stadium. Who goes to that stadium? You know, people don't go to that stadium to watch him. They go to that stadium to watch the Dallas Cowboys. You know, so, you know, honor the players that allow you to be able to go out there and make all that money by taking care of those that built your franchise.
I'll be talking more about that topic with the NFL and how they treat the players that played for them. But before we take our next break, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora live here from Borio's Restaurant this Wednesday and every Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., 8891 McDonald's Parkway, Cicero, New York, for those listening in. You talk about your children, and you have two young kids. You have a teenager, and you have Jane, who's six, correct? So they both play football. And with both of them being out there, and like you said, you want to keep your six-year-old from playing for a little while. I covered a few Pop Warner games this past weekend. I went out, and they wanted to treat them like they were in the NFL, so I commentated the games and ran, you know, all the plays and everything. And during the game of seeing 5 to 7-year-olds, there were four of them that went down on the field, four of them that needed assistance, kids crying, needed help, making sure that they're attended to. And, you know, you're looking at a baby. You're looking at someone right around the age of your youngest son. How do you handle it as a father to know what's happened to you, to know what's happened to your friends, to know what happens in the sport of football, and to still say, you know, Raphael, you can play. Jaden, you can play. What allows you to open that door to keep them playing football, having experienced what you've experienced?
First of all, why would you ever want a young kid to emulate by possibly being played by the NFL? Look at what the NFL does, and I would never want my children to be able to emulate with those guys in the NFL. But second of all, I said, you know what, I understand, you know, I'm not a psychic or anything, but I realize that I can't protect my son the rest of my life. You know, I can do my best job as a father, but he's going to get his bumps and bruises. So all I can do is when I play with them, when I train with them, when I work with them, you know, allow them to be able to go out there and show them the proper techniques of how to do things to prevent themselves from getting hurt. Being a personal trainer has allowed me that avenue, that venue, to be able to sit there and train my son in the aspects of being of injury prevention. So I'm always going to let them have fun. I'm not going to sit there and let them do something that they truly want to do, you know, unless it's like mountain climbing or deep sea fishing or something like that, or something that's very dangerous. But football is not a dangerous sport. Football is a sport. Football is what you make it, you know. So you can go out there and have fun with the sport. I myself, look at me. I played for 15 years pro, 4 years Syracuse, been playing since I was 5 years old. Okay. I'm retired from the game, you know, with minor injuries here and there. You know? So it's something I'm going to let my kids experience themselves. And if it's not for them, they can walk away. If it is for them, great. I'll always be behind them. But I didn't force them to play football. That was their choice. I really didn't want them to play, but it was their choice. And I'll always be a big father back in my sons.
The protective helmets that are worn in practice. Syracuse has been using them recently. They're those big jet. They actually look like the helmets that you use if you're filming a video game when they have the lights on there. They're big, they're thick, they're black, they have the cushion. Scott Schaefer said the biggest thing that you see from his practice is a lot quieter because you're not hearing those hits on the helmets. But obviously you're wearing them in practice to protect players. Do you think that this is something maybe they should entertain in a game to do something? I know they've changed the helmet. I know they tried to put more padding in. But if you're using the protective gear in practice, should they more so use it in a game to try and prevent this? Because in practice, you're not going to go full force and want to hurt your teammates. So, I mean, what do you think about that? Should the protective gear truly be for a game?
I think that's something that's down the road. Right now, once they get into color schemes and color coordination and things of that nature, where they can make those designs of those protective helmet covers look like just like the helmet, they'll get to the point where they'll be wearing them for games also. But for right now, it's a continuing growing process, you know, and they're trying to come up with new design ways to make the game a lot safer. You know, that's one of the ways. But right now, it's all about marketing, it's all about show, it's all about visuality, it's all about making money, because that's all the NCAA and the NFL care about. So right now, if they get to the point where those helmets are fashionable and they can wear them, or the slip covers, they'll wear them.
That coming from Rob Drummond, Syracuse CFL and NFL alum. And, of course, I'm here with you, Dan Satora. Wake-up call with Dan Satora, Boreo's Restaurant, every Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. We have your exclusive VIP cards every week that we're here. You can get one now, 10% off your meal tonight at Boreo's and all through football and basketball season. Rob and I will be back to talk about the NFL, what's going on in the NFL with some of the players, but are the owners handling their team the way that they should? I think that's a very easy answer for you, but we'll talk about it coming up.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Boreo's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Boreo's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Boreo's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary, or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Boreo's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Boreo's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Boreo's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, Boreo's Restaurant, live here every Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., talking Syracuse football, the NFL, and everything going on in the world of sports, because it does touch so many lives, so many families, and we'll be talking about one of those things coming up here in just a second. We have exclusive VIP cards to Boreo's Restaurant. If you pick one up, you will get 10% off when you use it for your lunch, dinner, or brunch on Sunday, courtesy of Wake Up Call with Dan Satora. So, Rob, as I said before, Syracuse CFL and the NFL, and of course Dan Satora here broadcasting with you every single Wednesday next to my partner here of more than 2 years, so I appreciate Rob being a part of this and doing this show with me. And you've been a part of the NFL. You and I have spoken very openly about the NFL. You've played. I've looked at it from a broadcasting standpoint. I've been to different games, seen different things, so we've seen it from two different sides. And now when you look at the NFL and how they're kind of handling players, one of the things that you had talked about a little bit before the break was the fact that these owners don't have head injuries. These owners are dying of old age. They're not dying of head trauma, CTE, you know, something like that that these players are dealing with. So to have this gladiator sport, to put all these bodies on the line, and to not do enough for these athletes after the fact, what can you say about the NFL? I mean, there's a new collective bargaining agreement which was made, and there's supposed to be money that's going to players, and you talked about the settlement that is going to the players once they're affected. So if you're showing signs of Alzheimer's, showing signs of dementia, that they'll help you at that point. Has the NFL taken a step in the right direction, or is it still backwards where we stand right now?
I think the federal judge made the NFL take a step in the right direction by basically throwing out that $700 million settlement and saying that that's not enough. The simple fact that it's like, you know, I look at these owners, you know, I look at a Jerry Jones, I look at Eric Sager, these guys are billionaires. But the simple fact that, you know, they basically have gladiators out there, like, they're allowing them to earn those billions. The first thing I think an NFL owner should do, because we all know NFL owners have money managers, you know, and financial analysts and things of that nature guiding them how to be able to make money. The first few years, it's like, you know what? Since you got a guy who's so good with you dealing money, like, allow your players to be able to have the same guy, or allow your players to be able to suggest, or allow your money guy to be able to suggest to these players someone they should use to be able to find out, like, let them learn how to finance their own money, you know, basically manage their own money. They don't do that for these guys. You get a bunch of young guys who've never had money before in their lives growing up. All of a sudden now you're throwing that millions of dollars at them. What do you think they're going to do? Of course they're going to go out there and mismanage that money. So when they're done with the sport of football, what happens? And the sport of football is what? On average, 3 years long. So when these guys are done with the game of football, they're broke. They have nothing because they spend it all on jewelry. They spend it all on cars, lavish gifts, flying everywhere. But it's like, no, but these guys still sit there and have these financial planners and all these money managers to be able to guide them, to be able to make them, to be able to go out there like Jerry Jones and build a billion-dollar stadium in Dallas. You know what? He had someone to be able to sit here and let him, show him how to earn that money to be able to do that, how to save his money to do that. Teach these kids the same thing that you're learning, or you're having someone teach you also. And that's the one thing that irks me about the NFL. You know what? It's okay when these guys come in and they're gladiators for you and they can run up and down a football field and score touchdowns and make you billions upon billions. But it's not okay for you to worry about their financial freedom and their financial success after the game is done. I worry about after the game is done, not while the game is playing, because the average lifespan of an NFL player is 3 years.
When you look at that, and you look at the fact that if it wasn't for these players, if it wasn't for you, if it wasn't for the guys that are out there right now, there would be no team. There would be no NFL. How do you take the control back? I mean, the collective bargaining agreement, obviously there was a lockout. There was time spent trying to figure things out, trying to get things right. The owners weren't happy. The players weren't happy. Who's going to win? And when you look at it now, we talk about one of the most important things, if not the most important thing, taking care of your retired players. How do you right the ship knowing that the NFL has 32 owners and thousands of players, but without those players, the owners would still be rich because a lot of them are independently wealthy, but they wouldn't be able to do what they do and have what they have and have the exposure they have. So how do we try and balance this out? Because the owners can use the heck out of the players, and their mentality for dealing with it is maybe saying, you know what, I gave him $32 million. I gave him his first shot. I gave him 4 years in the NFL. I helped his dream come true. But at the end of the day, like you and I both said, the owner is going to be rich no matter what. The owner is going to go home and probably live a long life. The player may or may not be rich. The player may or may not have handled their money well. And the player may go home in 10 years from there, get CTE, get Alzheimer's, get dementia, and their whole life has changed forever. How do we try and balance this out? Because the only time, like you said, it's really been helped was in federal court.
You know, Tex Graham, back in the 70s, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, said it best one time, and it just always made me think. He said, he basically said, the NFL players are nothing but cattle. And he was a farm guy from Texas, and it made me think about it before. It's like, you know what? When I even got to the league, I said to myself, it's like, you know what? We really are nothing but, you know, a commodity. You know, we can come, easy go, because the next guy's going to be here and do the exact same thing. You know, for me personally, I think how to change that is I think NFL players, when they sign a contract, you know, they should honor that contract. If they think they're going to opt out of that contract, they're going to have a great year, put a clause in the contract. It ain't that hard. Any attorney can tell you that. You know, I want to opt out clause in 2 years. If I'm having a good year, I want to be able to opt out of this contract. Write it in. It's not that hard. So now you're not haggling. Now it becomes a time after 2 years you're having a great year. You don't have to sit out. You're getting fined, things of that nature. That creates bad bad blood between the management and the players. So put in a contract. Say you get a 4 or 5 year contract. You know, after 2 years, I want to opt out clause in this contract. They can either say yes, they can either say no. And you go, you negotiate. But if you want to be able to negotiate a contract once you're having a good year or something, put an opt out clause in it. It's standard contract. You know, the second thing the players must do, the owners and players must do to come along. These owners who are multi billionaires must realize that these players have a short lifespan in the NFL. And the ones that don't have a short lifespan, yes, they have longevity, but their players are dying from the disease and injuries that they're getting playing the game of football. You know what? And they have to understand this, you know, and you guys are making a fortune, you know, from merchandising, you know, to licensing, to television contracts in a $1 billion range, you know what? The players get none of that. It's all the owners, you know, but they have to come to an agreement. I mean, that's why they have the collective bargaining agreement, you know, or the CPA, that they're trying to help these players. There's so much more they can do, but they have to be willing to talk to one another and really come to a resolution to try and resolve this so each party gets basically what they want.
When you look at the opt-out clause, it's something that is in the NBA. It's used all the time. LeBron James just used it. Chris Bosh had an opportunity to use it. Dwayne Wade had an opportunity to use it. It seems like more so in the NFL, and the big conversation is about guaranteed money. And I tell you right now, I'm the owner of the Eagles, and I'm going to sign Rob Drummond for 10 years, $100 million, and I'm going to give you $100 million over the next 10 years. Your contract with me has a signing bonus, and maybe your signing bonus of the $100 million is $10 million, and I got you 4 years that I have to pay that I guarantee your money. So even if you leave, I got you 4 years, $40 million. So the other $60 million you might never see. You might never be, well, part outside of the signing bonus, $50 million, you'll never see. So when we see these contracts in the NFL, they're different. And it's been brought up before by other broadcasters that have made note of this, that, you know, he said you can't get angry about how much money an NFL player makes because they never make as much as you think they're going to make. They never really honor the contract all the way to the end. Is that something to you that's been unique with the NFL? Because in baseball, it seems like Alex Rodriguez has been a terrible, terrible piece of the Yankees, but they have to honor the contract. They have to pay him when he's out, when he's suspended. You know, he's still under contract. He's still a player for the team. In the NBA, you have all these opt-out clauses. Players can change. You don't have to pay them after a certain point. Is the NFL the worst as far as making these contracts, as far as the player side of it, knowing that I'm telling you, for the next 10 years, you're my running back. But after 4 years, I can say, screw you, I'm moving on to the next guy. Is the NFL really screwed up in that sense that it is so... It's a shadow of what it truly is. It's just a facade, so to speak, because a guy like Albert Haynesworth, who was signed to Washington for 8 years, only spent 2 or 3 years there.
Okay, I think it's a different dynamics when it comes to the NFL, only for the simple fact that there's 53 men, 57 if you use the practice roster on the roster. You know, in the NBA, they keep 12. In the NHL, you know, they'll keep it anywhere between 12 to 16. So it's easy to guarantee a contract in the NBA or the NHL because there's so fewer players. In the NFL, you can't guarantee a $53 million contract, you know, because that's crazy. You know, so it's a different makeup. You know, there's ways around it, but as I said before, you know, the NFL can learn from the NBA, can learn from the NHL, can learn from Major League Baseball, because some of these organizations, these franchises, get it right. I think the NBA is doing a great job in how they, for a certain period of time, the contract is guaranteed, but they can opt out if they want. So it puts some onus back on the player. So the players can go from team to team to team if they want. But if they stay a certain year, they're going to get their money. If they don't stay, you know, they can opt out of that contract, or somebody puts that contract out. It's a different dynamic. A different makeup, but I think if all these organizations, major league organizations, sat there and talked to one another and learned how the other system worked, I think they come up with a plausible explanation of how they can get the entire dynamics of professional sports, you know, ironed out.
When you look at your time in the NFL, you obviously switched over to the Canadian Football League. There's other players that I know. S.J. Green, one of the best wide receivers in the Canadian Football League right now, is a good friend of mine. He had an opportunity in the NFL. They screwed him over. He was with a couple teams. I won't name the teams out of respect for the situation, but he was told something was going to happen. It didn't happen. He had an opportunity after showing how successful he was in the Canadian Football League recently, within the last couple of years, to come back. He ended up signing another contract to stay in Canada. He likes the fans. He likes the way he's treated. Between the Canadian Football League and the National Football League, what were the biggest differences to you?
I think there's a lot less politics in the Canadian Football League. You know, they just allow players. If you're a good player, you're going to go up there and play regardless. In the NFL, I find a lot of times that there are some kids that are certain men that was on the team, but he only made the team because their father was a coach of a certain team in high school or college, you know, so they made the team. And I was like, wow, we just released a very talented player just because, I mean, this other player here, his father was a coach of the closest side of the team. So it's just a lot of useless nonsense going on in the NFL, I found out. It wasn't about playing the game. It was just a lot of politics going on. And it still goes on to this day. You know, it's just at some point, it's just go out there and play the game. But if you watch it, you watch close enough, you know what to look for. Just look for the slight subtleties in every NFL game. You can watch it on Sunday. You don't have to be a fly in the wall to see it. You can see it if you watch the TV. A certain player won't go into a game. A certain player's mad at this game. You know, Percy Harvin got traded to the Jets for a certain man. You know, there's a lot of things going on in the NFL that it's cutthroat. You know, it takes away a lot from the game that I love. I play the game because I love to play the game. But basically, it wasn't about the money, it wasn't about the fame, it wasn't about the fortune. It was because I love the game of football. You know, and that's why I continue to play professionally for 15 years, because I love the game of football. And at that point, when I started playing with people who cared more about their stats, who cared more about the money they were making, cared more about the cars they were driving, or the woman they were talking to, or the club they were hanging out, I knew it was time for me to hang up and go on to another phase of my life.
What was the Canadian Football League like to you? When you talk about all the problems and all the issues and how the NFL, you played it because you love it. Your teammates, some of them played it because how many women they could get, where the clubs they were going out to, the money that they were making. They got it for all the materialistic reasons. When you switched over to the CFL, how were your teammates there? Was it a different environment, different world? How were the guys that you were sharing the locker room where they're different from the NFL?
You know, it was just a bunch of guys who there were no egos there, because a lot of those guys were in high draft round picks. A lot of them never had the opportunity to play in the NFL, so they came in humble. You know, when you come into any situation humble, you come in a different person because you see the world for what it truly is. I mean, I played in the NFL with guys that really thought so highly of themselves that they really didn't, all they needed was the vanity mirror. They didn't need the cameras or anything else in front of them. You know, so but it's a learning process, you know. And at 21, 22, 23, my first year in the NFL, I was awestruck from the simple fact that here I am now playing with guys who I idolized, guys who I really looked up to, you know, as a kid growing up watching football. But then come to find out that a lot of these guys were jerks. You know, and I didn't want to be around them. And I told myself, I could never be like that, nor would I ever want to be like that. And got to the Canadian Football League, there was nothing like that, with the exception of a few guys who I won't name their names, who bounced back and forth between the CFL and the NFL. You know, but other than that, most of the guys were humble, most of the guys had a lot of humility, and they just played the game because they loved to play the game.
That coming from Rob Drummond, playing the game for the love of it, and nothing else more important than that. Rob Drummond, Syracuse, CFL, and the NFL. And, of course, I'm Dan Satora here with you. Wake up call with Dan Satora. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway. For those listening in Cicero, New York, the 10% off cards here for you exclusively through Wake Up Call with Dan Satora are available right now. Just come up and get them, and they're yours for basketball and football season for Syracuse. You can use them on dinner, lunch, and Sunday brunch. And Rob and I will be back to wrap up, and we'll be talking a little bit more about Clemson and Syracuse going into Death Valley. And if Syracuse has a chance in the most difficult place to play in college football, according to Scott Schaefer.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora here from Boreo's Restaurant with Rob Drummond, as always, of the NFL, CFL, and the Syracuse Orange alum. Also somebody that cares a lot about the community, is a personal trainer, has come up with an algorithm, mathematically sound, using that brain of yours to do bigger things for people all over the world, to help athletes to become better athletes, help people to be healthy in their lives, and to do things that are really going to not only change Syracuse, but they're going to change this country as far as how we look at recruits, how we look at numbers, how teams are going after, you know, different players from all different sports. So the man sitting next to me is very easily within the next few years going to be a household name across the nation, and I feel very blessed to have him here with my show with Wake Up Call with Dan Satora. We're here every Wednesday at Boreo's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York, for those listening in. We have your VIP cards that'll get you 10% off here at Boreo's. Make sure you pick one up. And I want to thank everybody that came up to the table to talk with us today. We're always welcoming to do that, to talk with fans about any of the things. You know, I can't talk about my days of playing football. So most of the time they come up to tell Rob how much they love him, which is fine. You know, I can live vicariously through you. I'm just going to tell people that I was a third string punter a few years back. You know, there's some guys that were backup kickers that never played that are on TV now on Bravo, Million Dollar Listing. So I can get away with that. Josh Altman was a backup kicker to Mike Trout, I believe. So I think if I was a backup to Josh Altman, maybe that'll flow. I played with Donovan McNabb. I can get away with that. You don't think so? So I don't know. And I don't know if at 5'8 I could be a good quarterback out there, but I like the pickup game. That's what I do know. So, like I told you, if you want to go back out there, Rob, I'll go back out with you. I got 4 years of eligibility. But Rob and I here every Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. Thank you to everyone that's interacted with us. We really appreciate it, whether you're listening to the show here or listening from just relaxing at home on the couch. You have the opportunity to do that on wakeupcalldt.com. You and I have talked about so many different things, and it's hard sometimes to just come together on one to simply talk about that, but that's why we do the show every week, giving me a lot of ideas for the future. But we do have to talk about the Syracuse-Clemson game. It's in Death Valley. When teams go to Death Valley, there's a reason why it's called Death Valley, because your body is usually left on that field. Syracuse is going in to one of the most difficult places, according to Scott Schaefer, the head coach of the Orange, the most difficult place to play in college football. What can you say about Syracuse's hopes in this game? Because you have a young, energetic quarterback. He knows what it feels like to win. He played competitively against Florida State, who was the number one team in the nation at the time. He's got his first win under his belt. He's not afraid of anybody. But now he's going up against Vic Beasley, who by some is regarded as one of the best defenders in the country, not just the ACC. And he's going up against that Clemson crowd. So to have a young guy like A.J. Long, how do you kind of see this game going? Because his spirit is very strong, but his spirit is going to a graveyard right now.
You know, I look at it like this. As I approach everything, as I approach life, as I approach sports, as I approach, as long as you have heart, as long as you have the drive, as long as you have desire, you can accomplish anything. You know what? They're going to learn a lesson once they go out of South Carolina. They're going to win, learn a great lesson, or they're going to lose, learn another great lesson. You know, because if they lose, they're going to learn what that feeling, that pit in their stomach feels like. So the following year, when they come up here, they're going to be able to go out there and learn from that mistake. You know, if they win, it's a great accomplishment. It's something that, you know, that they can really live off and basically build towards the future. So anything you do in life is a great lesson. So Syracuse is going to learn a lot going into this game. It's a tough place to play, and Coach Schaefer is right. It's probably one of the toughest places to play. You know, I'd also have to put playing in Happy Valley in Penn State, you know, with 108,000 fans throwing marshmallows at you. That's another tough place to play. But you know what? My senior year, we came away from there with a victory. So anything's possible. So that's why they play the game. That's what I always say. So as long as you have heart, drive, and desire, anything's possible.
When you look at Dabo Swinney, and we talked about it before, the Clemson head coach has given a lot of respect to Syracuse, and I think that's a big thing. When you have Clemson's and the Florida States of the ACC and in the country to say positive things about Syracuse, to not look at them as a pushover school, I think it says a lot about Syracuse's program, about Scott Schaefer, about that there is respect out there for Syracuse, which a lot of fans are fighting for is that want to be respected again around the country with the team. And one of the things that he said, he made mention of Cam Lynch, outside linebacker for Syracuse, and Darius Kelly, the strong safety. And when I talked to him about the defense, what he saw in Syracuse's defense on film, he specifically brought up Cam Lynch and Darius Kelly. What can you say about both of these guys who are different? You know, Cam has gotten play over time. He's been a backup and then a starter and then a backup again. This is the first year he's been an outright starter. Darius Kelly came from junior college on the West Coast and came over to Syracuse, so he's only been here last year and this year. What can you say about Cam Lynch and Darius Kelly, because they've been singled out by Dabo Swinney? What have you seen from them this year, knowing that one of the best coaches in the country likes what he sees?
So Darius and Cam both play with what I call heart. You know, it's fun to watch them fly around. I mean, I've become a pretty good friend with Cam, and I tell him all the time, you know, young man, just go out there and just play with your soul. You know, just play within yourself. Go out there, fly around, and have fun, and do what you love to do since you were a Pop Warner kid. You know, and people don't understand that. So you play the game with Pop Warner, you play the game because you love to play the game. You know, you would watch TV, and you would see those professional athletes on TV, and you would emulate them. You would go out and practice and emulate, like me. I would emulate Marcus Allen. I would emulate O.J. Simpson. I would emulate Franco Harris. I mean, because these are guys who, I mean, they weren't real to me. They were on TV. They were professional athletes, but it was like, wow. And when I had the opportunity to actually, you know, play at the college level and play the professional level and play with some of these guys, I was in awe. But you know what? The one thing, it may be home my skills, but it made me realize how much I love the game. That's the one thing I said to Doug Hogue a few years ago when I watched him play. Doug Hogue played with passion, desire, drive, grit, everything it takes to be a Syracuse Orange man. And once these young men understand that passion, that drive, that desire, and what it is to be the Prentice Red Helmet and play in front of the fans here and play as a Syracuse Orange man, they'll get it. Right now, some of them get it, but they all don't. Back in 1987, that entire year we went undefeated, we got it. The entire team got it. We understood what it was like each and every day, not just to play in those games, but to put that red helmet on and walk out into that Manly Fieldhouse field and be able to be a part of something special. And being a part of something special is the history of Syracuse University. From Floyd Miller to Ernie Davis to Jim Brown, Larry Zonka, John Mackey, I can go on and on and on. You know, so people, when I sit here and listen to people across the country or whatever, not give Syracuse University football the respect it needs, we've already earned the respect because we have Hall of Famers in pro. We have Hall of Famers in college. We have guys who've done more for the sport of football than anyone can ever imagine. So to me, it's about pride and being proud of the simple fact that I was able to pull on that orange and blue jersey and that red helmet, that orange helmet, and walk onto that Kerry Dome field and be a part of something special. Once these young men understand that they're a part of something special, just by being at Syracuse, it'll click. And that time is coming soon.
You feel that time is coming soon for Syracuse, that we will be able to get back to seeing a team that, when you say Notre Dame and you say Penn State and you say Florida State and you say Clemson, that one day again they'll say Syracuse. And when I was growing up, it was Syracuse, Notre Dame, Penn State. It wasn't even Alabama in those moments. It was those northern teams. It was seeing the gold helmet, the orange helmet, the white helmet. You say Syracuse isn't far away from doing it again. How close are they, and why do you think that they're not far away?
Let's see them getting athletes like A.J. Long, you know, for him to basically be able to go out there and do the things he's doing as a freshman. It's unbelievable, but it's a testament of the blue-collar, old-style type of football player who basically put his work in, went through all the practices, was happy, charismatic in practice, you know, just being able to go out there and being a team player. It's the exact same qualities that they had back when I played, back when we were, you know, 11-0-1 my junior year, 10-2 my senior year. You know, then the following year, they played another New Year's Day bowl game. They played the Peach Bowl, you know. And just that beginning to the start of the tradition of Syracuse going to New Year's Day bowl after New Year's Day bowl after New Year's Day bowl, begin back then, this could be the start of something special. Just for the simple fact that this young man started a quarterback. And just what he carries and the charisma he gives this team, they feed off him. And that's very, very odd, you know, for such a young player. Basically, your teammates to feed off you like that. Like my teammates used to always tell me as a freshman, they fed off my youth, my energy, my ability to be able to go out there and just want more and more and more. AJ is the same way. I see Syracuse really surrounding around this man and doing well.
When you look at a guy like AJ, you've compared him before to your quarterback, Don McPherson. When you see his energy, When you had Don in the huddle, was it fun? Was it exciting? I mean, you talk about the sport should be fun. You should be excited. You should just relax and play. You shouldn't be thinking too much or caring so much about this is a big game or this is this or I got to get this or I got to go here. But you should just go out there and be a kid and have fun. A.J. Long's charismatic behavior, when you remember Don McPherson in the huddle, I know you're not in the huddle with A.J., but I know you're watching closely. Does it look similar, and what did it feel like? When you got in the huddle with Don McPherson, Rob Moore, what did it feel like in the huddle in those moments?
You know, and honestly, just sitting back there when Donnie would start to call a play, I would always run through the back of my head. I would say to myself, I said, you know, Robert, always be alert, because with a quarterback like Donnie, anything can happen. You can turn a simple one-yard play into a 70-yard or a 70-yard bomb or a 60-yard run or a 50-yard touchdown pass. You got to the point where we did plays where Donnie called the play. I write, 28 pitch throwback to the halfback, and that was the throwback to the quarterback. And that was something we worked on once in practice. But it was a play where I got a pitch, I was going to act like I was going to run, and all of a sudden threw the ball pass back to Donnie, and I threw it for a touchdown. So at any given time, when you have all guys that are in sync on the same level, that believe in one another, that have the confidence in one another to be able to go out there and make plays, a lot of magical things happen. And Syracuse is getting to that point. They're not quite there right now, but they're getting to that point, because right now, when those guys walk into the huddle, you can see a smile on their face. Weeks earlier, I've seen frustration on these guys' faces, even when they make mistakes. Just notice these guys now, especially on offense, when they make a mistake. You don't see the frown, you don't see the scowl, you don't see the... Because all these players understand that. You know what? They have a leader out there. Granted, it's a true freshman, but they have a leader who's going to be able to go out there and can bail them out of situation and can make plays. And the key thing about that is they're having fun.
When you see this team doing what they're doing, I mean, under Terrell Hunt, like you said, there was frustration. It looked like sometimes there was a divide. But with A.J. Long, he's always had this attitude. He's always been this way. I talked to him through his recruiting process. He was always, even on the phone with me. Hi, Mr. Tora. How you doing? Such an honor to be on your show. What are we going to talk about today? I mean, always excited, always happy, thanked me profusely for being on the show, thanked every opportunity he had to be a part of anything. When you have a kid like that, I mean, it seems easy to say that he could go out there and be positive himself, but it takes a true leader to change the attitude of the team around you. And Scott Schaefer had made mention of the fact that he's changing veterans. There are guys that are coming over to him and saying, we got you. They're going to him in practice and saying, linemen are going up to him and saying, you're a little brother, we're going to carry you through this. And they're seeing that happen. Even Prince Tyson Gully with Urban Phillips, the true freshman running back, taking him under his wing. When you see the atmosphere of this team, it happened in a situation, and this is how it usually happens, is it happens when you least expect it. Injuries and problems and adversity have somehow made Syracuse a better team. Would you expect it to happen any other way from a team that's written in history as being a blue collar, you got to punch us in the mouth and then we'll respond? Would you expect anything different than to have this story with A.J. Long and this type of thing happening to Syracuse to make them positive?
I see it as poetic justice in any good book, any good movie, any great novel, anything has to begin somewhere. It has to have a starting point. This could be the starting point for Syracuse. In 1986, after coming off the Cherry Bowl, we started off the season 0-4, and just had a horrible season, didn't make a bowl game. The following year, we go 11-0. The next year, we go 10-2. So it has to start somewhere. And that was a great run for Syracuse, great team. So, then the Marvin Graves era took over. Donovan McNabb took over. Paul Pasolini became coach. And Syracuse was a mainstay at New Year's Day bowl games year after year after year after year. Had downtime now, but now it's time for Syracuse to turn around and start again. They have their youthful quarterback. They have the team that believes in this young man. They have the spirit to be able to go out there and understand what it takes to be a winner. And that's the one thing about winning. You have to understand what it takes to be a winner. You have to understand what it takes to lose. They know how to do that. But you have to really understand what it takes to be a winner and understand that this is Syracuse football. And by this being Syracuse football, ask some of the old school guys who played back when I played, or Donovan, or Marvin, or Michael Owen, anything. What is Syracuse University old school football about? And they'll tell you.
When you lived a positive era of Syracuse football, you saw a positive era in 1983, beating the number one team in Nebraska when they came into the Carrier Dome. To live and watch, to live and play in, and now to live and watch again. How has history been for you to see Syracuse steadily rise, fall with Greg Robinson, rise again with Doug Marrone, and with Scott Schaefer be rising, recruiting better, but still not beating the Clemsons and the Florida States? When you look back on the history of your playing days as well as your watching days, how can you define this story that Syracuse has had? Because the chapters have been different, and as you can say in a movie, there were certain parts of the movie that were really, really good, and some parts dragged on too long that you didn't want to watch. How would you define Syracuse's movie so far?
I mean, just by understanding that nothing's going to be perfect, and change is always inevitable, and change is always good, whether it be good or bad. But the simple fact that watching Syracuse, there were times where we shouldn't have beat Penn State and we destroyed them. We shouldn't have beat Florida State, we beat them in the dome. We shouldn't have beat Miami, we blew them out. There's teams up and down the board who were dominant teams at the time that Syracuse did beat. It was in a different era, a different time, but Syracuse one day, maybe starting this year, maybe starting next year, we'll get to that point where they'll start knocking off and they'll start beating this team. And it usually takes a special player for a team to surround themselves around. And I think in A.J. Long, this team has a very charismatic, skillful, humble, leader who basically for the next 3 years, if he stays that long, if he doesn't get that good, they can rally around and build around this young man because he's a talent. He's a talent that we have not had here at Syracuse in a long time.
You said Marvin Graves, Donovan McNabb, Don McPherson, A.J. Long. When you look at all those guys in history, we've talked about his passion, we've talked about his tenacity, we've talked about his positive attitude, we've talked about his ability to get guys to just relax and smile and have fun. When you look at Graves, McNabb, and McPherson, where is the similarity between him and them? Have you seen the leadership from Long yet?
You know what, yes, I have. And I say that because he has the intangibles to basically go out there and be in a situation where you're, I won't say struggling on offense, but on certain plays and certain downs and certain situations, it can become frustrating. But he has a knack for being able to calm his players down and rally the troops. And any quarterback that can rally the troops is a very, very good quarterback because his players believe in him, they feed in him, and they understand him. And for a freshman to have that, that's unheard of because a lot of times, a lot of these veterans are like, you know what, you haven't had enough battles, to be able to go out there and be my leader. But these guys are taking hold of this young man because of the type of person he is on the field. Not sure how he is off the field, but I can tell you what, from the way they react to him on the football field, I can tell how that young man is off the field. And he's a leader off the field also.
Before we finish up here, Borio's Restaurant Wake Up Call with Dan Satora live every Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. from Borio's, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York, for those listening in. We found out the schedule for Notre Dame and Syracuse. Syracuse and Notre Dame will face off a bunch of times between now and 2025. Their next matchup will be at MetLife, again, neutral field, 2016. In 2018, Syracuse will go to Notre Dame, to South Bend. In 2022, Notre Dame will come to the Carrier Dome, completely unheard of. And in 2025, Syracuse will go back to Notre Dame. You and I have talked so much about Syracuse having these Penn State games, USC games, Notre Dame, that when the big names come in, you have to take the people that are sitting in this room, take the people that are listening in and say, if you're a Syracuse football fan and it's a Syracuse game that's not a road game, it needs to be in the dome. Notre Dame, be it only once, they will be in the dome in 2022. Syracuse fans got to wait 8 years for it, but it will happen. What can you say about Syracuse finally getting a team like Notre Dame to say, we will come to the dome, we will face you at home, and we will give you the respect that you have to give us twice in the next 13 years?
When did you say that first game is, 2022? The one at Carrier Dome?
8 years from now.
That's not respect. That's the simple fact. It's like, you know, we've had so many games either at MetLife or so many games in South Bend that we'll throw you a dog bone. You know what? A team is playing on national television against the number three team in the country. This Saturday, Ole Miss is playing in Baton Rouge against Louisiana, LSU. You know what? And LSU is a top 25 team right now. LSU is playing in the dome next year against Syracuse. So that's respect. Because LSU realized what we did to them down there when we played them in 1980. We pounded them. They understand the type of caliber that Syracuse, what Syracuse can be, when they put their minds to it. So that's not respect. Notre Dame playing us one time in 8 years, it's not showing respect. It's like a throwing a dog a bone when they done something good.
If Notre Dame came to you and said, this is going to be the situation, we're going to do two games on a neutral field, two games in South Bend, and we'll give you one game. Obviously, the Dome is getting the least out of the five games that are going to be played. How would you have responded to Notre Dame if you were in Dr. Gross's seat, if you were the athletic director of Syracuse University, and they said, you get one, we get two, neutral gets two? What would you say?
I would talk to Ole Miss. I would talk to Mississippi State. I would talk to any other team out there. There's more teams that are ranked also that can possibly give you a better deal. Hey, like, as I said before, LSU is playing in the Carrier Dome. Why is that? And they're a nationally ranked team, and they're a powerhouse in the SEC. Maybe not this year, but they usually are. You know, so there are other teams out there that can give just as much national attention as a Notre Dame team. I think Notre Dame gets away with way too much in college sports right now just because of who they are.
Wrapping it up with Clemson, going back to Syracuse's upcoming game. We're not going to give a score. We're not going to give a score in this. I think it's more fair to say how Syracuse is going to play in this game. What do you see happening, knowing what you know about A.J. Long, knowing what you know about this team right now, knowing Clemson, how do you see this game going down in Death Valley, Scott Schaefer's first game against Clemson as Syracuse's head coach in Death Valley?
I know this is going to be a great test for the team. It's going to be a great test for A.J. Long as a quarterback. A young man being able to go into that type of hostile environment and that type of situation, playing one of the top teams in our conference, and the lessons, win or lose, they're here to learn. And it's really, really, really help this young man in the future, because now there's nothing more that's going to have to be scared about. As I said before, he's a gunslinger. Go out there and play this game with a relaxed mind. Go out there and play this game like you're capable of playing. If you come up short, great lesson learned. If you win, you'll be praised. So just go in there in a relaxed mode. Just be able to do one thing. Have fun.
I think if Syracuse continues to go in the right direction and not Jekyll and Hyde in this game, I think that, you know, you're going up against a quarterback in Cole Stout, who's had his positive moments but also has been replaced by Taj Boyd in the past. Deshaun Watson, a true freshman this year. So Cole Stout has his vulnerabilities. Everybody does, but he wasn't a starter. He wasn't supposed to be a starter. So I think from that standpoint, you're not going up against a prolific offense under Cole Stout that's going to happen all the time. I think defensively, Syracuse has shown improvement. I think the defense has gotten better. I think they did things against Notre Dame that had not been done up to that point. Everett Golson had not been intercepted. He was intercepted twice. Against Florida State, Syracuse definitely played better than other teams Florida State had faced, played better than their 56-point loss a year before with a lot of the same personnel. And then you look at this Clemson game, and I really truly believe that Syracuse, with Tim Lesser as the offensive coordinator, they've done better things. They've been a little bit more innovative. They're playing to the strengths of their players, not trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. So I think that in this game, do I see Syracuse winning it ultimately? I don't know. You know, do I believe that they can? More so than FSU? Yes, I do. But the offense is going to have to score. They've got to get a couple touchdowns. You can't put it on the defense to score two touchdowns to win the game for you. And you can't put it on your kicker because they can only get 3 points at a time. So I do think that Syracuse can get some respect here. I think this is a good time to play against this team. And I think no matter what Syracuse fans can be happy with is knowing that A.J. Long brings a different environment to the team, and it's contagious. And when you have a positivity element that's contagious, just like negativity, it spreads like wildfire, but it does the opposite for your team and puts you in the right place. And I think we can expect that. So I thank Rob, as always, for coming out here, Syracuse, CFL, and the NFL. And, of course, I'm Dan Satora of Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live at Boreo's every Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. Stayed a little bit later with you today. Make sure you pick up your VIP card to Boreo's and get 10% off tonight throughout the football and basketball season. And for everybody listening in and everybody here tonight, thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. God bless. And we'll be back next Wednesday, hopefully, with some good news with Syracuse.